Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm Todd Stauber. I'm here with Sam Lady. We have a great show for you today as we look at the Premier League action from the morning, including wins for Manchester United and Manchester City. We head to Japan, where we find Chelsea on the brink of a Club World Cup championship. We'll also have former Republic of Ireland international Fran O'Brien as a guest on the show to talk about Leo Messi, the record, and ask the question, is he the best ever? We'll take a look at some off-season activity in the MLS, and of course, we'll have the game predictor where Sam Lady has made a stunning comeback to make things fairly even between he and I. Sam, before we start today, though, we'd like to send our thoughts and prayers to the people of New Connecticut. Just a horrible tragedy that's happened here in the United States. Once again, a shooting, this time in a school, 20 kids that were just needlessly murdered. It's just a very sad weekend here in the United States, especially there in Newton, Connecticut. We'd like to send our thoughts there. We're going to go to the Premier League today, where this morning we had Manchester United hosting Sunderland. Sunderland hadn't won at Old Trafford, Sam, since denying them the title in 1968, and looking for their first win there in many years. Today wasn't to be the day that they would end that run. United themselves had a score to settle with Sunderland after the treatment they received on the last day of the season last year. After United had apparently won the league, news of a late Sergio Aguero winner for City against QPR led the remaining Sunderland supporters at the Stadium of Light to abuse the United players that were still on the pitch. Many United players had claimed that this was a fixture they were definitely looking forward to, and it appeared that way early on, Sam, in the match. It just, from the very get-go, United was buzzing, and Sunderland looked porous in defense. They looked slow and just didn't look up to the task. 16th minute, Ashley Young with a fantastic turn, served towards goal, only to have former United player Johnny O'Shea blatantly miss a clearance and have the ball drop right to the person he didn't want to, Robin Van Persie, who calmly passed the ball into the upper corner of the net. 2 minutes later, it was Tom Cleverley, played a ball to Michael Carrick on top of the box. Sunderland's defense had no interest in following Cleverley. He got a great ball right back from Carrick, finished on one touch to the far post, 2-0. It's just a game, Sam, that, you know, just from the get-go, right away, first 20 minutes, United made their presence felt. Any thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, Fergie's team talk was already done. I don't think he had to say anything except for the fact of reminding the players of what happened, you know, at the Stadium Light on that, you know, dramatic day last season. So I think, you know, I think this was an easy game for Fergie to get his players up for. And, you know, where another opponent, you know, similar in sort of stature to Sunderland, this may be in a game where they slipped up, you know, coming off a bit of a high from the last minute, you know, sort of last few minute victory against Man City. You know, this could be in a game where they slipped up, but the fact that this was the team that rubbed their nose in it at the end of last season, Todd, you know, that was Fergie's motivation today. And, you know, like you said, the way they started today, they looked like they had something to prove. And, Sunderland looking pretty dodgy at the back. Last few games now, Todd, they've been punished through poor defensive clearances. And I'm sure that's something that Martin O'Neill's going to be working on in the next week or so, because, you know, they can't keep giving away such sloppy goals like that at that level.
Well, as much as, you know, John O'Shea gave to Manchester United when he was there, I'm sure that that Fergie was sure glad he wasn't on his team when he saw that misclearance. It was shocking. But you know, the second half started off right away. Rooney hits the bar in the 46th minute, and right at that point, Sunderland actually got their first chance of the game. Craig Gardner, you know, a little pretty dangerous chance. David De Gea was able to thwart that effort. But in the 59th minute, Van Persie plays Young, overlaps him brilliantly, and as he gets the pass back from Young on the overlap, he somehow splits the two Sunderland defenders to find Rooney, who pokes it with his left foot through the other defender, the Sunderland defender's legs, and gets United's third. You know, it was just one of those situations where you could see, you know, the potential of the combination of Van Persie and Rooney, despite the the absolutely shocking defending of Sunderland. It was a very good move to goal. A lot of movement from Van Persie. I mean, in the end, that was a 20-30 yard run that he made to play the ball to Ashley Young, get around him, get the ball back. It was very good. The funny thing was is as they're showing the celebration of that goal, they go over to Ferguson and he's tapping Nemanja Vidic on the shoulder to warm up for his first appearance in September, and that really became the next big thing of the match, Sam. As Vidic comes in, he entered in there in the 68th minute. Unfortunately, United gave up a very bad goal in the 71st minute. Former United man Fraser Campbell found himself completely unmarked for a free header at the back post. But in the end, Vidic had a pretty good run out there, and I think that was a good environment and a good game to get him his first minutes. And, 20, 23 minutes was about right for, I think, what Fergie wanted to do with him. Any thoughts on Vidic and his return?
Well, Man United fans and Fergie definitely very happy to see him back. We've talked on a weekly basis on this show, about how porous the Man United defence have been, conceding sloppy goals and, being the team that can shoot the goal first. And, they've been fortunate that they've got the firepower to get themselves out of, potentially sticky positions, mm-hmm. And I think Vidic, Vidic's leadership and he commands the box, And I think, any goalkeeper has a player like that in front of you, it's going to fill you with a bit of confidence. He's going to do the goalkeeper's job for him, Todd, a little bit more perhaps than Smalling and Jones and Fernand have been doing right now.
Yeah, well, and as you look at the game, I think you made a good point that this was the kind of game that United hasn't been putting away early. They've given up the first goal against lesser opponents, and then they've had to chase the game. And they did a very good job to obviously get themselves up 3-0. But I still felt that in the last 20 minutes, the defending wasn't good. Patrice Evra just stopped playing. He just starts jogging around at the end of all of these games, and I don't know if it's a fitness issue, if it's a focus issue, if he's just genuinely disinterested, but time and time again, he lost his shape there in the last 20 minutes, and he just seemed to, be going forward without any real concern for the shape of United's back four, which actually surprised me a little bit with Vidic coming in, his first game. I would think that those guys with a 3-0 lead would be a little more disciplined and stay in. Very disappointed in Patrice Evra, as I typically am when I watch him play. But one thing interesting that came out this week is that there was word that with Vidic coming back into the side, that Sir Alex Ferguson had already determined that he can't and won't play Vidic and Ferdinand together just because of the combined lack of pace between the two aging center backs. And as Vidic replaced Ferdinand in the 68th minute, I think there was a little bit of proof to that theory and maybe a little bit of a sign of some things to come here for the rest of the year, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very, very successful partnership for Man United over the years, Todd, and they've probably been the best central defensive partnership United have had since the days of Bruce and Pallister, which is a partnership that, Fergie is always talking about in the press. And, Man United, very happy to see Vidic back. And I think, it's going to be a case, you're going to be picking, you're not going to pick Ferdinand and Vidic together. You're going to be picking, Ferdinand and a Smalling or a Vidic and a Jones or vice versa. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. I think, he sees, Ferdinand and certainly maybe Vidic to an extent now with the injuries, Todd, that he's had in the last couple of years. He sees those two players as being part of the development of Jones and Smalling. So,
I felt Smalling looked very good today. No issues there. Phil Jones looked okay. He's not a genuine right back, but he did fine. But I thought, again, Ferdinand looked very slow today. He was a little more comfortable because they weren't under as much pressure. But I just, every time I see him play, it just becomes more and more clear that his time at United is definitely coming to an end, which, is too bad. But players age, this is the nature of the situation. He's been a great servant to the club. But I really do believe that Ferguson is seeing that he has to look at other options if they plan to make a run in the Champions League and a run at the title. But United now 6 points clear at the top of the table. And Sam, I mean, with this performance, United looks to be flying at the moment. They look very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's, they've got, you know, again, I look at the, you know, you look at the resources they've got up front, Todd, and you just, you feel that they've got a, a chance of protect, of a, you know, taking the championship back off Man City, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if Rooney's not having a good day, Van Persie is. If Van Persie's not having a good day, then Rooney is. If Rooney and Van Persie are not having a good day, then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's Welbeck and Chicharito. It's, there isn't, there aren't that many coaches and many teams in the Premier League and even the Championship now that have got that type of firepower. You know, you're guaranteed that any combination of those four players is going to get on the score sheet. And, you know,
yeah,
when you've got goals in you, Todd, as you know, as a player, as a coach, if you know that your team's got goals in you, you've got a chance of winning games. And, you know, I think Fergie understands that. You know, I remember an interview with Ryan Giggs in January last year, and he said, you know, Alex Ferguson's number one fear has always been that they lose the championship on goal difference. And, of course, that became a reality this year. And, therefore, I think that's why we saw him, you know, go after Van Persie, because Van Persie's guaranteed goals. And
yeah. Well, and I think also if you look in the midfield, I mean, you know, Cleverley and Carrick looked very good today. I think Carrick has been very, you know, just a very steady player for United in the middle. But you've got Scholes that's come on. He's done very well. He's a guy that can come on, and we know what he's capable of doing. You've got Anderson that's going to be out here for a few weeks, but he was in very good form before his injury. Tagawa is now coming back. It's rumored that he's going to be training next week and will be available here in the next couple weeks. You know, you've got a lot of options wide as well. Valencia, obviously today, Valencia and Ashley Young played, but you can throw Giggs out there. You just got a lot of options for those that, you know, those front six for Man United, however they decide to play it, you know, whether they're in a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3, however they decide to play those six players, they've just got so many options and so many quality players. And I think if they can stay relatively healthy, I think that they're gonna find themselves right in the thick of things when it comes to both the Premier League title and the Champions League if they can shore up their defense.
Yeah, I think that United are weak in midfield, Todd. You know, I'm not being disrespectful to Sunderland here, but, Man United did play Sunderland today. And you look at what Sunderland have got in midfield, and it's just not an equal match, you know. I think United, if they're going to come unstuck anywhere this season, it's going to be in the Champions League, and it's going to be perhaps due to a lack of, you know, quality and maybe, you know, profiles. I don't know, you know, Todd, if a Carrick and a Cleverley are going to be able to compete against the, you know, a Borussia Dortmund midfield. I don't know if they're going to compete against a Munich midfield. So, you know, it'll be interesting. Certainly in the Premier League, you know, they've got the resources there. But, you know, the Champions League right now, and you're looking at the, you know, the teams that we've talked about as, you know, going deep in that tournament, you know, I don't think they match up. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, what Fergie does in the transfer window in January, if anything. He definitely needs a new left-back, that's for sure.
I've never felt that way, and I've been shocked that he's had the captain's band while Vidic has been out. But we will see. There's some rumor that Ashley Cole could be rumored to go to United, but that wouldn't be in the January transfer window. It would definitely be at the end of the year. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But a great game, and, you know, it's a good win for United. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call in and talk with us live today at 760-283-0846, or you can text in at 360-920-7273. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. Sam, we're going to move on here to Man City Newcastle, where these teams came out, and to be honest, Newcastle had to run a play in the first 10 minutes of this match, Sam, but Man City took control at that point with an absolutely fantastic ball from Yaya Toure, who found Samir Nasri, who then squared to Sergio Aguero for an easy finish. City found the net again on 39 minutes on a corner kick. David Santon, Newcastle defender, clumsily failed to clear Javi Garcia's header off the line and instead knocked the ball into his own net. For any of you who saw that, it was just what a gong show that was for Santon. But 2-0 at that point, And I would say when halftime Town City up 2-0, it was deserved. But Newcastle came out in the second half with a completely different conviction. And right away, Demba Ba, who was very good on the day, scored a 51st-minute header, shipped the momentum of the match. Things looked very, very good for Newcastle to equalize on several occasions. Papa Cisse, Demba Ba, both coming the closest. But unfortunately for Newcastle, in the 78th minute, Silva played an overlapping Zabaleta, who found Torre for a one-time finish, and the game at that point was essentially over. Newcastle didn't look bad, but again, Man City, similar to United, there's just so many dangerous players, so many options going forward. It's a difficult task for anybody trying to defend that group of players.
Yeah, you know, Man City obviously wanted to, you know, the first thing they needed to do, they didn't necessarily need to play well, as they thought, but they needed to get the points on the board, right? And that, you know, playing that early morning game, you know, before your main rival, you know, Man United, puts a little bit of pressure on United, you know. You get those 3 points on the board, and all of a sudden, you know, only 3 points behind, and, you know, the players, you know, the Man United players got into the Sunderland game, you know, nervous about the result. So, you know, the pressure's on there for the United to win the game. But yeah, you're right. You know, Man City haven't really hit top gear yet. You know, I think, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit later on. I think they were, you know, a little bit unfortunate in the Man United game last week. You know, perhaps if our friend Nasri had some bigger cojones, that we wouldn't be talking about, you know, a Man United win right now, maybe looking at a draw maybe in the Man City win. But yeah, you know, City have not hit top gear yet. They've been pretty inconsistent, you know, but they're there and thereabouts. And, you know, for me, Todd, you know, last season was all about Yaya Toure. I think, you know, we talk about David Silva, but, you know, for me, the most influential midfield player in the league is Yaya Toure, because when he's playing, Todd, you know, he's unplayable.
I agree, but how about the combination of them? I mean, Sam, talking, I mean, you know, today, David Silva was very good in midfield for City, and along with the combination of Aguero and Carlos Tevez up top, you add Nasri into that, they've got an attacking group that is just fantastic, and you sit Yaya Toure behind that, and he gets forward. I mean, you know, when you talk about United maybe having trouble matching up in midfield, I mean, can a Carrick and a Cleverley match up with Silva and Yaya Toure? I don't know. That's a tough task for anybody.
Yeah, so, I agree. I mean, the resources they've got there, it's pretty incredible. And, you know,
it's funny because, you know, both Kolo and Yaya Toure are going to be gone for up to 6 to 7 weeks in January for Ivory Coast at the African Nations Cup. You know, Yaya Toure is going to be a massive loss. City have plenty of cover for both players if you think about the number of players in Mancini's war chest. But, you know, after the game today, they were talking about it. Steve McManaman and Ian Dark were talking about it, and McManaman just said, you know, with the amount of money that City spent in the past 2 years, they better be able to survive without those two players when they go away to the African Nations Cup.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is they've always got Scott Sinclair that can dust himself off and come off the bench, though. He seems to be making up the numbers for Man City. You know, really, really a strange signing, if you ask me. You think about those players being lost, but look at the resources they've got. You know, Jadon Lescott, who for me was one of the best. You know, Lescott Company partnership last year was one of the best in the Premier League. You know, Company without a shadow of doubt the best defender in the league last season. And you know, Lescott can't get a game at the moment. You know, with Nastic, you know, being brought in over the summer. So, the resources are there, right? The challenge is, you know, does Mancini know what his best team looks like? You know, I think that's always an issue you've got, Todd, when you've got that sort of plethora of quality and that depth, you know, of players. You know, what does your best team look like? And, you know, I don't think he knows. And I think maybe that's part of the problem they have right now.
Yeah, well, you know, I think in terms of Newcastle, you know, in watching them play, you know, even though right now after this result, they are dangerously close to the relegation zone. You know, they're sitting in 15th place, 2 points free of the relegation zone, but. And just in watching them play, you have to think they're going to be a team that's going to be safe, because I thought they looked very good in the second half, you know, and had, I mean, the chance from Papa Cisse and Demba Ba, those two chances they had, had those gone in and they equalized it too, that could have been a different result. But Demba Ba, I was extremely impressed with him watching him today. And the same goes for Papa Cisse. And I think Alan Pardew, well, I'm not a big fan of him. I think he does a good job with that team. And I don't think Newcastle is going to be in any danger of going down as they did a few years back. Any thoughts on Newcastle, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly had a breakthrough season last year. That last transfer window, two summers ago, Pardew made some very, very clever signings. They obviously brought Chet Kielty in. They brought in Kadavy, who was a fantastic midfield player. Made a lot of good signings and a lot of players that people didn't really know about. And they really caught the sort of league by surprise, Todd. It's interesting. When they were pressing and playing well today, that was the type of game, Todd, that this time last season that they were going on to tie and possibly even win. So, similar to Man City in the sense that they've not really hit that level of consistency. Obviously, they beat Sunderland in midweek 3-0 and played very, very well and could have got a few more goals there. But, they're a team that's just struggling to find a rhythm right now. And I think that's the reason why they're, down in the position they are. But, they've got too many resources. If you've got players like Barr and Cisse in the team, you're going to score goals. And I think if they can shore up a little bit of back, get some consistency there, I think, you can expect to see Newcastle, in that top eight come the season end and, maybe a productive festive period over Christmas and all of a sudden, they're pushing for, top six. So, I've got nothing to worry about Newcastle. They're a decent side. And I wasn't a big fan of Pardew, partly because of, I think Mike Ashley did wrong by, getting rid of Chris Houghton as early and quickly as he did. But I think he did an incredible job last year. And obviously, he was manager of the season last year in the Premier League. And that very often does not fall to the coach, Todd, that doesn't win the league. So now I'm supposed to show the respect he has of his peers. So, I think Pardew does a good job. I think they've got good players. And, they'll be pushing, top six, top eight by the end of the season if they can find a rhythm next season.
Yeah, well, I was I spent some time with Marcus Hanneman, former U.S. international goalkeeper, who played under Pardew at Reading for some time this week, and he speaks very highly of Pardew because I mentioned to him that I didn't really care for him, but he speaks very highly of him. Thought he was a great manager and really, really enjoyed playing for him. So, and Marcus has played for quite a few managers in England through his career there. So, it was interesting to hear that. So we're going to go to the other scores of the day. Of course, the Chelsea-Southampton game is postponed with Chelsea being at the Club World Cup in Japan. We had Norwich had a 2-1 win over Wigan. Norwich extended their Premier League unbeaten streak to 10 games and now sit in seventh place ahead of both Arsenal and Liverpool. Goals in each half from Anthony Pilkington and Wesley Houlihan bested Sean Maloney's 51st-minute strike for Wigan, who stayed planted in the relegation zone for the moment, sitting on 15 points. Stoke and Everton tied 1-1. Ryan Shawcross knotted in a Stephen Pinner cross for an own goal in the 36th minute, unfortunately. But Kenwyn Jones scored his first Premier League goal in 16 months in the 52nd minute to equalize, and the match finished there. Everton hold their place in the top four for now. Obviously, we'll see how the results go tomorrow. While Stoke stay firmly in the top 10, sitting on 24 points. Down in London, we had Queen's Park Rangers 2-1 over Fulham. Harry Redknapp and QPR earned their first Premier League win at Loftus Road, with Adel Tarbat hitting for a brace, bringing QPR off the bottom of the table for the first time in the campaign. Tarbat, initially considered a player that Redknapp would offload, has secured his place in the team with his performances under his new manager, and I can't see him being sold in the January transfer window, Sam. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, he's a creative player, Todd, right? He's an instinctive player, and, I think it's important, Todd, when he was at Tottenham, he's still a very young player, and, by all accounts, didn't have the discipline to perform in the team that at the time, Todd, was playing very, very well. So, I remember an interview with Redknapp just as he's taken the QPR job, and one of the questions was, what about Tarabat? You obviously released him at Spurs, and he said, no, he's a great player, right? He just couldn't get in the team. And this time last year, so in the January transfer window, he was subjected to a 12 to 15 million pound bid from Paris Saint-Germain. So he's right. A player that it's highly creative, and you know, you gain something and you lose something to other players like that. You gain the instinctiveness, you gain the quality, you gain, you know, the ability to win a game and create chances from nothing. But at the same time, you lose a little bit of something. And you know, it looks like since he's been at QPR, he's become a bit more disciplined and he's performing a little bit more for the team as opposed to himself. And I think if Redknapp can find the right balance and get players around him to cover some of the things that he's not so good at, he can be a player that, you know, that can, you know, put extra points on them for this season. Because let's be fair, you're looking at the lineup for QPR right now, you just don't see where the goals are coming from. So it would have been a big weight off Redknapp's shoulders today that, you know, they've won their game first and foremost, but they've got a, you know, midfield player chipping in with a couple of goals.
Well, I mean, and bottom line is Harry Redknapp hasn't lost a match since he's got there, you know. And, you know, right now they sit, I think they're just 5 points away from getting out of the relegation zone. So, you know, I said it last week, I think, or the week before on the show, that I do think Redknapp's going to get him out of there. I think if there's anybody who can do it, I think it's him. And I think they're going to get some results here, and I think they're going to climb out. Because when you look at a Wigan and gosh, watching Sunderland today and how bad they were in the back, you know, I think QPR can get out of that hole with Redknapp leading him. So it'll be interesting to see, but great for them to get their first win. And now we're gonna go to Anfield, Sam, where, because I'm sure you're still crying, Aston Villa destroyed Liverpool 3-1. Christian Benteke scored twice and brilliantly assisted an Andreas Wieman goal on a very good heel ball to him, leading Villa to a much-needed win at Anfield. For Liverpool and Brendan Rodgers, who got a late consolation goal from captain Steven Gerrard, a really very disappointing result when they looked to be climbing the table and seemed to be hitting some sort of form. But to go in front of their home fans at Anfield and just, I mean, it was the game was finished. The one goal that they got from Gerrard, the game was completely done at that point. They've got to be extremely disappointed, and Rodgers has to be you know, fit to be tied.
Can't quite believe it, Todd. To be honest with you, I saw this as being an opportunity for Liverpool to get another win at home. You know, we've built a bit of a rhythm right now. You know, great result last week against West Ham with Suarez being, you know, banned. You know, this is a game I'm looking at going, this is 3 points against Aston Villa, right? We're climbing up the table, and all of a sudden now, you know, we're sniffing around those, you know, European Champions League positions. But obviously, as soon as the manager starts talking about those types of things and, you know, getting above Man City or chasing Man City, we end up getting a result-wise spanking from Aston Villa. Of course, you know the Premier League is about winning games, but the result doesn't necessarily tell the story of the game. Liverpool here, looking at the stats, you know, 79% possession. So, you know, 29 shots, but only out those on target. So, you know, it's a similar trend here developing with Liverpool, and the only way you're going to fix that, Todd, is by, you know, bringing in players that are going to, you know, turn those chances into goals. But, you know, everybody's looking for that, right? Every manager in the league, even Alex Ferguson, is looking for that player that is going to score.
Every manager of every level of football in the world is looking for that player. But to be fair to Liverpool and Brendan Rodgers, I mean, they still, on 22 points, they're still, you know, they sit 5 points out of a Champions League spot. So, you know, all is not lost. But I was shocked. I thought for sure that was going to be a game, like you said, that Liverpool was going to dominate at home. They do seem to be getting into a little bit of a form right now. And I thought for sure it was going to be 3 points for Liverpool. But I was watching, you know, the game on Gamecast and watching those goals go in. I just couldn't believe it. But you know, fair play to Villa, who needed a win. They were sitting right on the brink of the relegation zone, and they needed those 3 points. And what a huge win for them to go on the road to Anfield, not an easy place to play, and to drag that result out. So they've got to be thinking, they've got to be pretty happy. But that was a good bus ride back to Birmingham. The only problem with that is that they realized they were going to Birmingham, and that's where they lived. So then that probably wasn't as good of a bus ride.
I'm just glad that Aaron Hyde's in England at the moment, because no doubt my phone was ringing off the hook, you know, with voicemails and text rubbing my nose in it. So, but hey, Aston Villa talk. You know, they've got Benteke, right? He's a player that puts the ball in the back of the net every week. And, you know, there's your answer. They're unbeaten now in five games, I believe. And, you know, that boy knows where the back of the net is, and you know, that looks like a great signing. It's going to be interesting to see if big clubs are sniffing around him, you know, come January.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me. So let's look at the rest of the weekend here, Sam. Tomorrow we've got Swansea traveling to White Hart Lane to take on Tottenham. I think that should be a good match. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the game predictor. Also tomorrow we've got West Ham traveling to West Bromwich Albion at the Hawthorns, where West Brom, after a great start to the season, they could definitely use 3 points. And 3 points will climb them back into the top four if they can get that win at home. But after what happened today with Liverpool at Anfield, I'm not holding my breath. Monday should be an interesting match with Arsenal traveling to Reading at the Majeski Stadium. Arsenal, as we well know, dropped out of the Carling Cup this week with when they fielded a full side, mind you, against League Two Bradford City and lost on penalties. I think that this Reading game is important for Arsene Wenger and Arsenal to get that win, because if they lose that game to the team at the bottom of the table on Monday, I think there's going to be an uprising at Arsenal. I just don't see how they can avoid it if they don't get that result, Sam.
They're having an absolute shocker this season, Todd. You look at, and bearing in mind, Todd, you know, this is a team that had recently beat Reading, you know, 7-5 in that absolute thriller, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago in the, you know, the Carling Cup or whatever it's called now. And, you know, as each day, as each game goes past, Todd, what we've seen through Arsenal again, is just the lack of consistency. And, I mean, let's be fair, that, you know, shock results do happen, and typically that happens in the FA Cup and in the Carling Cup to an extent, you know, when teams are fielding understrength teams. But, hey, you know what, when you're fielding your first 11 against a team like that, you're expecting to come up with points. And, you know, I know, Wenger, you know, sort of brushed it under the carpet in his, you know, post-game, conversation. But, you know, things are not right at Arsenal, Todd, and there's been some rumours coming back. You know, there's no smoke without fire, right? There's been some rumours that there's been some issues between Wenger and Steve Bould, and, you know, he's gradually taken a bit more responsibility away from Steve Bould, and he's not happy with that. And, you know, the players have been complaining that they need more training defensively, and by all accounts, Arsene Wenger's a very, very stubborn personality. And, things are not well at Arsenal. You know, you asked me this question a few weeks back on the show, Todd. I said, whether I thought this may be the last season for Wenger. I said no. But, you know, as these things, you know, as each game, as week goes by, you know, it may be time for a change. You know, Mourinho, you know, rumoured to be leaving, you know, Real Madrid in June, and, you know, maybe that's a position for, you know, Arsenal Wenger to take. So, I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to say the wheels have fallen off, but they're certainly getting loose and getting looser every time Arsenal steps on the pitch. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, it's always been well documented that Arsene Wenger, you know, what he's done at that club is phenomenal, and nobody can ever take anything away from him. But as you said, it might be time for a change. Sometimes that time just comes. It's not saying that he isn't a great manager. It's not saying that he hasn't done a great job, but it's just sometimes it's just a change is needed, and new life and new blood is needed to, you know, they need to bring that in to revamp what's going on. And, you know, we might be approaching that, and we'll see on Monday, because I think, to me, that's an absolute must win for Arsene Wenger. He has to win that game, or I think that there's going to be some problems for him.
Yeah, and, you know, typical Arsenal, this could be a game to go out and win 6-7-0, right? And then, we drop the conversation for another couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, you know, they get beat, you know, 3-0 by QPR, and all of a sudden, you know, the wheels are falling off again. So,
yeah,
it's a good win for Arsenal, but it wouldn't surprise me if they go out and win 4-5-0 in this one. It's,
Exactly. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 minutes here on Blog Talk Radio and backsportspage.com. Listeners can call in the show and talk with us live at 760-283-0846, or you can text in at 360-920-7273. We will have our first guest caller today, former Republic of Ireland international Fran O'Brien, who's going to be here to talk Leo Messi with us. That's going to be at 1:30, so in about 25 minutes. Make sure to catch that.
Do we have an interpreter for that talk?
We may need an interpreter to get through Fran's accent, but we'll do our absolute best. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest rated soccer training app available and a must for any player coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. Sam, we're going to head over to Japan here and look at the Club World Cup, where Chelsea, as much torment as they've been through this year, they somehow look to be on their way to the Club World Cup Championship when they face Corinthians tomorrow in Japan. They had a convincing 3-1 win over Monterrey of Mexico, the CONCACAF Champions League winner, in the semifinal. Rafa Benitez and his men now looking to follow their UEFA Champions League glory of last year with a World Club title. Corinthians disposed of Al-Ahly 1-0 in the other semifinal, but Sam, you just have to think that Chelsea's primed to win this game handily.
Well, I'll tell you what, Todd, you know, I talked before about how much of a shrewd tactician Benitez is, if he's got the right players. And you know, it could be said, Todd, that, you know, you're only looking at a couple of managers in the game globally that you can look at and say, you know, this is a type of game for Benitez. You know, if you're looking for a coach to win you that one-off game or to win that home and away game in these knockout competitions, you know, you've got to look at Benitez as being one of the coaches that would be first on your list. You know, let's not forget Liverpool, and that he won the Champions League with a relatively poor Liverpool squad in 2005, and took them again to the final the following year. Benitez is his element. You know, this is one game. Mm-hmm. Opportunity to win some silverware, maybe get the fans off his back, maybe get a pat on the back from the owner, and it would not surprise me to see Chelsea win it. I'm expecting Chelsea to win it. You know what, I think I mentioned this a few weeks back, it's perfect timing this for Benitez. You know, I thought that maybe, you know, moving away from the Premier League action was a good distraction for them.
I remember you saying that a few weeks back, that you thought that this, you called it at that point, that this was going to happen, and you thought it would be good, and, you know, I agree with you. You know, Fernando Torres is continuing to find his form under Rafa Benitez with a goal in the semifinal. And, you know, it seems that here Benitez is on the verge of yet another World Club Championship with a team he had nothing to do with getting there, the same feat he accomplished when he led Inter Milan to the title a few years back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, at the same time, though, you've still got to prepare your team for this game. You know, even the players have come out, Todd, and said how much they've enjoyed his training and his style, because all of a sudden now they're a much tighter unit, right, defensively, having a solid defensive, you know, foundation is very important, especially at that level. Yeah, so I expect Chelsea to win this one, and I expect Benitez to improve on what he's done in the last few weeks. And, you know, this little bit of isolation in Japan is given an opportunity to focus them and get a bit of time spent on the training field with them to really get his ideas across. And the rumor is that if they win tomorrow, that we're going to see Rafa Benitez do the Gangnam style dance all the way up to the trophy stage. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
If that happens, Sam, I'm not sure what I would do. But I would like to see the Spanish waiter do that dance, though, however. I did want to ask you a couple more things about this competition, the Club World Cup. I mean, I've always understood the point of the competition, but I've never really truly enjoyed watching it or really followed it. It seems that, for one, the tournament's obviously set up for whoever wins the UEFA Champions League, you know, to go through as they go right into the semi there. But, you know, I just, some of the clubs and some of the, I was watching a few of the games last week, and I just, to me, you know, when you think about the World Championship, you know, if you think about a World Cup or something of that nature, you think of the best players in the world, and we're certainly not seeing the best players in the world. I mean, you've got Auckland, The team from New Zealand that's in there, these aren't even professional players. These are guys with regular jobs. You know, not to take anything away from the Auckland team that was in it, because I think it's what an accomplishment for them to get there. But I just don't see this being a massive competition. I mean, you know, our time it's going to be 2:30 a.m. when this game's going to play, and I'm not going to get up for it. I'm not interested in interrupting yet another night of sleep to get up and watch an early game to watch this game. One, because I wouldn't want to watch Chelsea play against anybody if I had the choice. But I think Chelsea's going to destroy Corinthians. I don't think it's going to be a good match. I think they're going to roll them. And I'm not a big supporter of this competition, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that, just coming from a different perspective, an English perspective, and somebody who's lived in Europe.
Well, the difficult part, the most challenging thing about this, Todd, is getting there, right? And obviously, to get there, you've got to win the Champions League. So, yeah, you're right. It's not really a legitimate tournament in that sense. It's really a showcase, maybe for sponsors, to come together and pick, teams from, that would normally not ever get a chance to play against each other, with the exception of some exhibition games. And it's an opportunity to bring different nations, different cultures together and put on, a spectacle. But you're right, yeah. You've got Postman Bruce that played for Auckland FC, coming up against, Fernando Torres. It's a bit of a, a bit of a mismatch at times. And, perhaps if there was a little bit more to it, if it was maybe a four-game tournament where, Chelsea teams and the team coming out of the Champions League was having to, play over four games to get the championship, or get to the final, maybe that'd be different. But I don't know. It's at the end of the day, it gives a player, the opportunity to be a world champion or a World Club Cup champion. And I know Frank Lampard has come out in the press this week and said it's a tournament he wants to win because he'll never get a chance to win this again. So a great swan song this. I'm sure whether Chelsea win or not, I'm sure we'll see John Terry on the winners' podium sneaking his way in there. So it's a great way for the Terrys, the Coles, the Lampards and Al to maybe finish to sign off on their career for Chelsea, because they're not going to do a lot in Europe this year. The chances of them winning the league right now look pretty slim. So I think Chelsea are going to take it very seriously.
Well, for Chelsea, I think this is a good thing because, as you've mentioned and we just talked about, it gives them a chance to get out of England, get away from the pressure that's on them from their fans right now, and, get a trophy. And in the end, a trophy is a trophy. And I don't want to discredit the competition, in terms of that, because, like you said, I mean, the whole challenge for a European team is to get there. And if you've won the Champions League, then you certainly deserve to do that, because the Champions League is arguably the toughest competition in the world for a club side. In watching the games, they just don't do much for me. I'd much rather watch, just about anything else. But, I think also you bring up a good point. It's as far as sponsors go, as far as the popularity of the game in Japan, these games have been, very well attended. The buzz around the tournament and the competition in Japan, it has been very good. And, it's something a little bit different, a little bit out of the box as far as what we're used to. And it does give teams that typically would never play each other a chance to play each other. I see the value in that, and I do think that's good. I just see these, an English team goes in there, or whoever's won the Champions League goes in there, and it's going to be very difficult to knock that team off. Any of those teams are going to have a very, very difficult time to knock them off. So it just, like I said, it just seems like, the competition is set for whoever's won the UEFA Champions League to go in. They win two games and they win the whole thing. It's a tough one, but it is what it is, I guess. Looking forward to, watching Sir Alex Ferguson have a go at Rafa Benitez after he wins this for not having anything to do with the team getting there and still winning it as he did at Inter Milan. So I am looking forward to that. So Should be good. Well, we're about halfway through the show here, Sam. You're listening to Todd Stauber, Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and backsportspage.com. Listeners can call into the show and talk with us live today, 760-283-0846. Or you can now text in and chat with us at 360-920-7273. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest rated soccer training app available. And a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. We're going to have our first guest here coming up in about 15 minutes. First guest ever on From the Touchline, Sam. Irish Republic of Ireland international, Fran O'Brien. He's gonna weigh in on the next topic of conversation, which is Leo Messi. And we're looking forward to that call. If anybody else wants to call in, or text in any thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. We'd also like to once again send our thoughts and prayers and condolences to the people and the families and the children of the horrible incident that occurred on the east coast of the United States this week in Connecticut. Just a senseless act. I think most of the country here, Sam, just wondering how can these things continue to happen. And we just wanted to, on behalf of Sam Lady, I just want to, again, send out our thoughts and prayers to the families in Newton, Connecticut. And so now we will get to Leo Messi. And what a week for him. I mean, what a year for him. What a career for him so far. Last Sunday, Messi broke Gerd Müller's 40-year-old record with his 85th and 86th goals in the calendar year as Barcelona defeated Real Betis 2-1. It took only 16 minutes of the match for Messi to equal Mueller's record. And 9 minutes later, a fantastic exchange with Andres Iniesta saw Messi break the great German's record that has stood since the 1970s. After yet another brace later in the week against Cordoba in the Copa del Rey, Messi now sits, Sam, 76 goals in all competitions for Barca, with an additional 12 for Argentina in just 67 games. I mean, is this unbelievable or what? What are we seeing here, Sam?
Well, what we're seeing is somebody that is, you know, likely being compared as one of the best players ever. And, you know, the criticism from some, you know, pessimists will say, well, he's never won a World Cup, with Argentina or anything credible with his national team. And until somebody's done that, you know, they can't really be considered to be, you know, the world's best. But at the same time, so, you know, for him to, you know, he's not going to win a World Cup by himself. He needs to have the support players around him. And right now, Argentina don't have that. But, you know,
yeah.
Now, what can you say about him? You know, he's the consummate professional. You never see him arguing with referees. You never see him fighting with players. Right? You never see him diving, right? I'm not sure if you've seen it. There's a clip on YouTube, and it's labeled Messi diving. And it just really identifies, you know, just the coordination and the will to stay on his feet, right, when he's going past players. And as you know, he gets hacked down 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a game. And, you know, very often he just rolls out of it, you know. For me, the best player I think I'd ever seen, in the flesh was Zinedine Zidane. And, two different types of player. You know, Maradona's up there, of course, Pelé, George Best, but, you know,
yeah,
we can add Messi to that group now. You know, he scores goals every week. He's never injured. He's won European championships. He's won nearly everything possible with Barcelona. And he's still only 27 years old. Yeah. 27 years old. So he's maybe not even complete yet.
I think he's 25. I think he's gone into a time warp from gone 2 years ahead. But I think that one of the things that you just brought up that amazes me the most about it is that he's stayed injury free for a guy that's that small, playing against so many guys that just want to kick him up in the air, for a guy that takes as many touches as he does. It is phenomenal that he has not sustained any major injuries. Okay, obviously he had the scare last week, but I think it's a testament to his fitness, to his preparation, of how he prepares his body, the drive that this man has to be the best is something that I know that I've never seen of a player. And we'll bring Fran O'Brien in to talk about players of the past that he saw play and that he played against to compare to Messi here in just about 11 minutes. But just the fact that he is remains so injury-free. I mean, it's one thing if you've got a center back that's injury-free or a right back who doesn't spend much time on the ball, gets it, knocks it, you know, this and that. But here's a guy that, like you said, he's getting chopped down 8, 9, 10 times a game. He's taking a lot of touches on the ball. He's involved in, you know, he's playing against guys that are much bigger than him. But he's got a center of gravity that's so low. He bounces off guys. He's able to keep his feet. He's not looking to dive ever. And he's just, he's something that, you know, of course, all the people of our generation are saying, yeah, he's the best ever. I think that it's very difficult to say that because, let's talk about, can he win a World Cup on his own? Well, to win a World Cup on your own at this point, in this day and age, is a lot more difficult than it used to be. You know, when Diego Maradona won in 86 for Argentina, he did a lot of that on his own. You know, he was a great player. But, you know, I don't think that there was as much parity in the world at that time. There's obviously the four or five great teams in the world at that time. But you didn't see that. I think that the same goes for Pelé. I think that the same goes for a lot of guys. You know, if you want to bring the Argentina factor into this, I think give him a little bit of time, and I think that he will do some special things on that world stage. But it can't be judged on that because, like you said, in this day and age, one player can't win a World Cup on his own. It just isn't going to happen. There's too many good players in the world. Too many good teams, too many good managers. So I don't like to hear that being brought in when people do bring that in. But I do think it holds some weight. He needs to be able to perform and be the player that he is with Barcelona for Argentina.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's, you know, Messi and Xavi and Iniesta, those guys have really shaped, you know, the style of play. And it's not the other way around. It's not the style of play and then they shape the player. You know, these types of players have got the profile and you know, the technique, the composure, and the bravery. You know, Messi's such a brave player. You know, you never see him shrieking from a tackle. You never see him, you know, hiding from the ball. You know, he gets hit four or five times in a row. He still wants the ball in tight areas. His desire, his work rate, his bravery, his composure, his skill, his instinctiveness. I mean, what more can you say? I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, the only thing that would make him a better player, Todd, is if he was maybe that good in goal as well.
Well, and I think one thing that shouldn't go unsaid is that, you know, Messi has spent his entire career at Barcelona. And you know, Barcelona's done a great job to help him develop and to become a great player because as many goals as this guy's scoring and has scored, he's not a selfish player by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he plays within a system where the ball is moving constantly. They're sharing the ball constantly. The ball's, you know, it's Iniesta, it's Xavi, it's Xavi, you know. It's just constantly moving, and he's not a selfish player. He's not, you know, yeah, he's scoring a lot of goals, and when he gets his chances, he takes them. But I just feel that Barcelona's done an excellent job of developing Messi to be the player that he is. And I think that Barcelona needs to get some credit for where he's at.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He, you know, he always makes the right decision, Todd. You know, which is a big, you know, a massive part of the game, which is undervalued. You know, we talk a little bit about skill and speed and strength and bravery and everything, but, you know, his decision-making qualities, Todd, are incredible. And, you know, perhaps he doesn't get enough credit for that. You know, it's easy to talk about his goals because it's those stats that really, you know, elevate him to, you know, the position that he deserves. But, you know, it's the other stats, you know, look at his work rate off the ball defensively. Look at the amount of assists that he chips in with, you know, for his team. The amount of, you know, it just, he's an all-round player. You know, he, people try to compare him and say Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player in the world, but I'm telling you, Ronaldo does not have the work rate, the bravery, the discipline, and the sportsmanship, you know, that a player like Messi
has. I agree with you 100% on that account, and I can't stand when people compare Ronaldo to Messi because they are different. I watched Ronaldo play live two seasons ago. When I was studying at Real Madrid, and it was frustrating to watch him play because, you know, he's standing around, he has no work rate, you know, he is the prima donna. Ronaldo is the prima donna, and he ended up scoring two goals in the game I watched, which was frustrating. But at the same time, you watch Messi play, and you can tell that there's a trueness about him and how he plays the game. He's an honest player, where I don't feel that Ronaldo is. Ronaldo is a physical specimen, and I don't want to take too much away from him because he was a Man United player and did great things for us. But I don't think there's any comparison between those two players. They're different players. But two, I just feel Messi's a whole different class above when you talk about, you know, what you say, his professionalism, his sportsmanship, the way that he approaches the game. And I just don't think there's any comparison there. Last year, Leo Messi made La Liga history with 50 goals in the league campaign. 50 goals and became Barcelona's top scorer of all time, passing Cesar Rodriguez's record of 232 goals that had stood since the 1950s. He also equaled the record for goals in a Champions League season with 14 goals, and he's now on his way to passing Michel Platini for his record fourth Ballon d'Or, the award for the world's best player. I mean, when you look at these stats and look what he's already accomplished at just the age of 25, Sam, I think it's quite the accomplishment, because, as you well know, most players, not goalkeepers but field players, they're said to be hitting their prime between the ages of 26 and 29. I mean, is it possible that he hasn't even hit his prime and we're going to see something even more than what we've already seen out of him?
Well, he looks like, well, you know, sometimes when you're watching play, Todd, it looks like he's being controlled by a kid in the stand on a PlayStation, but not to the extent of David Luiz at Chelsea, where he's running around like a headless chicken, right? You know, Lionel Messi, he just looks like he's on a different level to everybody else, and that's because he is. And you're right, if he can remain injury-free like he has done, which is very, very important and often understated, if he can remain injury-free, you know, we may see, you know, Messi take his game to the next level. And that'd be frightening to see what the next level is like. I remember an interview with Arsene Wenger about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was, people were talking about character, and he said, if you want to see a person's character, you want to watch them in a game. He said, because in a game, the player's true character is going to shine out, and if you look at the personalities of Messi versus Ronaldo, you know, they're night and day in terms of their character on the field. You know, Wenger talked a little bit about, you know, Some players are just not very good in practice or don't take practice quite as serious as others, and, you know, they become gamers. So, you know, look at Messi's character in games compared to that of Ronaldo. And, it's always something that you want to show, you know, up-and-coming players, talk, because, you know, it just goes to show the amount of effort that he puts in, and matched with that skill level, you know, elevates him to the position he's in. And he's head and shoulders above every other player on the planet right now. And rightly so. And,
here's a question for you. We're just a couple of minutes away from former Republic of Ireland international Fran O'Brien joining in on the Messi conversation with us. But here's a question that I have while we're waiting for you. A lot of the great players, their skills and their attributes are transcended through different competitions. We've talked about the fact that Leo Messi hasn't really hit the form with Argentina that he's hit at Barcelona. But do you feel, bring Leo Messi to the Premier League and that style of play and that style of defending, do you feel he's still as successful of a player if you bring him to the Premier League?
Yeah, I do, talk. And you know, obviously you need support players around him, right? But just the speed that he has, the close control that he has, you know, so defenders in the Premier League, if you've got a player like a Ryan Shawcross, who I think is overrated, right? I mean, these players, Todd, are going to be scared to death to go anywhere near him. You know, when he picks that ball up, and his first instinct is to run at people and to run at the space. And he would absolutely terrorize the defenders and the players in the Premier League. Yeah, and the question would be, you know, whether he would get past the season without somebody like Shawcross, you know, bending in half, you know, with a tackle and snapping his leg. But there's no doubt about it. You know, he's a master technician. He's a master tactician. He makes the right decision. His desire, his ability, everything's there.
Well, he certainly. It's certainly just been, you know, just to watch this this whole thing transpire. I mean, gosh, when you think about it, 88 goals in one calendar year, Sam. I mean, it's just there's teams that haven't scored that will go years without scoring that many goals, and he's getting them two at a time.
I've never scored that many goals in practice, though.
I don't think I've scored. If I add up every goal I ever scored from U5 all the way until me playing over 30s now, I haven't scored 88 goals in my entire soccer career.
Yeah,
it is unbelievable.
It's always said, and as you know, as a coach, as a fellow coach, the most difficult thing to do in the game, Todd, is to score, and he had got that absolutely wrapped up.
Yeah, well, yeah, he certainly has a hold on that. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. We're talking Leo Messi right now. You can call in and weigh in on Leo Messi, who set the record for goals in a calendar year just this past week. Listeners can call into the show and talk to us live, 760-283-0846, or you can text in at 360-920-7273. We're waiting right now. And here he is. We're gonna talk with Fran O'Brien here. Fran, former Irish international player for the Republic of Ireland. He was the first player to be capped by the Republic of Ireland while playing professionally in the United States. He went on to play after a great career at Bohemians. In Ireland, where he had 62 appearances and appeared in the Champions League. He came to the States, where he was in the NASL and played many games for the Philadelphia Fury, went on with the Montreal Manic and ended with the Vancouver Whitecaps before moving to play indoors. Fran, are you with us there? Can you hear us okay, Fran?
Yes, Todd, I'm here.
Can you hear me? Franner, we got you online here. You're on From the Touchline for 90 minutes. We're talking Leo Messi, Fran, and we've just been talking about the question of, is he the best player of all time? In your career, you had a great chance to play with, against, and see some players play from a generation that we didn't see. And I just, you know, when we talk about players like a Gerd Müller, whose record he broke, a George Best, a Michel Platini, a Johan Cruyff, and of course Pelé, Where do you think Leo Messi stacks up against those kinds of players? Fran, can you hear us?
Hello.
We're losing Fran there. He's cutting out. We've had a little bit of technical difficulty there. We'll get back to Fran here in a second. Sam, do you have any thoughts on those players that I just brought up there?
George Best, you know, was a player that I've always admired watching on YouTube. And, you know, you look at George Best, that, you know, I think he retired from the game, Todd, at 25. You know, it's tough for us to sort of compare apples to apples here, because they're obviously completely different generations to Fran and these other guys. But, you know, it's almost like Lionel Messi retiring now. Which would be insane.
That would be insane.
Yeah, and you know, he was at the height of his career. He, you know, he performed very well for Man United, and obviously had a lot of off-field interest, shall we say. I know this is a family show, so we won't go into detail. So, the same sort of thing could be said about Maradona. You know, in terms of how they looked after themselves professionally, like, you know, even to an extent. You know, we've got to be looking at, you know, putting Paul Gascoigne in there even as a top player. I remember for my generation. But how do we compare Van Messi against the Müllers and the Pelés, the Platinis? Well, we hope we get a chance to speak to people like Fran, right? Because, you know, he's played against these guys firsthand, and
Fran's having some technical difficulties. We did lose his call, but he will be calling back in. So we're going to move on here, I think, for a second. And when we get Fran back, we will jump back over and talk to Fran when he calls back in, just having some technical difficulties there. I don't think they had cell phones in the Republic of Ireland when he was growing up, so I think he maybe had some trouble with that. But when he gets back on, we're very much looking forward to talking to Fran. We really appreciate him calling in. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady here on from the Touchline for 90 minutes on Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. Listeners can call on the show and talk with us live today, 760-283-0846, or you can text us at 360-920-7273. It looks like we do have Fran back on the line here. We're going to see if this is we can get him on the line here. And, Fran, is this you? Are you okay, Fran?
Yeah, I'm okay now, Todd.
Okay, it's good
can
to
hear me?
Fran. Yeah, we can hear you just fine, Fran. So I'm just going to pose the question to you again. I'm not sure how much of it you heard, but, you know, we're talking Leo Messi, wondering, is he the best of all time? You got a chance to play with, play against, and see players like Gerd Müller, whose record he broke, George Best, Michel Platini, Johan Cruyff, and, of course, Pelé. Where do you feel that Leo Messi stacks up against these great players of your generation?
Todd, he's just unbelievable. I think the little guy is brilliant. You know, he's a small guy. He's not well built. For a little guy, he does tremendous things with the ball. He has it all, scores goals, plays in tight positions. His record speaks for itself, and I think overall, for me anyway, I think he's got to be the best player of all time.
So you would put him above, because you got a chance to see Pelé play, and you got to see, you know, the George Best and the Gerd Müller. So you would put him above those players, no question.
Definitely. I think he's proven it in Europe, and he's proven it at the World Cup stage. I think he's just absolutely brilliant player. And, you know, I've seen them all. Maradona, another great player. Cruyff, great player. This guy tops it all, I think. I think he's got it all.
Yeah, and the other name that we brought up was of course Zidane, who, you know, was a fantastic player. And what we've talked about is the one thing that Messi is missing is that World Cup. And do you think that he's going to be the player to lead Argentina to their next World Cup, Fran?
I definitely think so. I think the big stage of the World Cup, and I think it's going to come in Brazil for him. I definitely think they're going to keep it. He'll top it all at that venue.
Well, it's certainly set up for it. I mean, being right there in South America, and you know, maybe I think Fran's got a good point, Sam. Any thoughts on that, Sam? What Fran's having to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, Fran's obviously played at the highest level, and you know, he's seen seen these players, you know, up front and personal, and you know, it's always good to get a sense of perspective. But you know, one of the things that astonishes me, Fran, is Messi's consistency, and time and time again, he's talked directly. He's only 25 years old, and you know, for the last, you know, 5-6 seasons, he's scoring goals that, you know, teams are struggling to score. His consistency and his application to the game and his drive and his desire is pretty incredible, right? So.
The biggest thing for me is the fact that he's hardly ever injured. I mean, look at the amount of games he's been playing over the years. It's just incredible.
It is, and we talked about that, Fran. The fact that, you know, I was saying that here's a guy who, for the amount of touches he gets on the ball and the situations he's in, and every guy he plays against is trying to kick him up in the air. There's no question. I mean, The preparation physically and for him, the discipline in his training to stay so fit and play so many games, I think it's just, to me, I agree with you 100%, Fran. I think it's the most remarkable thing for a guy that size playing at this level in this day and age.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we all knew how he grew up and whatever, you know, as a young lad. And for me, the fact that he can right tackles, being kicked, brilliant in tight spots and still puts the ball away. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is. All right, well, Fran, we're going to move on here. We really appreciate you calling in, and I believe you're driving over to Spokane right now. Is that right?
Yeah, well, snow's coming down.
Snow's coming down.
Yeah.
Is it like an old December day back in Dublin here?
Yeah. The roads are clear, though, so we're okay.
Excellent. Well, hopefully they've got a pint of Guinness waiting for you when you get there. So we'll talk to you soon, Fran, and thanks very much for calling in. We really appreciate it. Fran O'Brien, former Republic of Ireland international. Thanks again, Fran.
Yeah. Yeah, best of luck. Bye.
All right, cheers. Sam, are you there?
I'm still here, Todd, yes.
It wasn't bad on the translation. I could understand it very well. I think that's the best I've ever been able to understand, Fran.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I tell you what, there is not a better accent in the world, Todd, for the word brilliant. Anytime an Irishman says the word brilliant, just give me a little chuckle, because it just sounds so right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's classic. Well, we really appreciate having Fran O'Brien on once again. It's our first guest of the show. Fran was former Republic of Ireland international, Fran O'Brien. He was capped 4 times. He was the first player to ever be capped for Ireland while playing in the United States. So we really appreciate his perspective. And I think, to me, Sam, the funny thing about, you know, I was expecting to throw all these names out to Fran, and I thought he would maybe think about it a little. But there was absolutely not one hesitation. There was no question that Messi is the best ever in terms of Fran's thoughts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's interesting, right? I'm just reading a quote yesterday, you know, in preparation for the show. It was by Gerd Müller. He said, you know, my record stood for 40 years, you know, 85 goals in 60 games, and now the best player in the world has broken it, and I'm delighted for him. He's an incredible player, gigantic, and certainly the best player ever. I mean, and that's coming from a player of Gerd Müller's stature. I mean, that's an incredible testament right there. I mean.
Yeah, well, it's, unbelievable, and, you know, I feel lucky to be at a point where, you know, I get to watch him play, because let's be honest, you know, I've always been upset that I never really got to watch Pelé play. I just wasn't old enough. And, you know, to be at this age, you know, to be at our age and so involved in the game and get to watch this, it really is something else. And it's something that I definitely don't take for granted, having so many other players. You know, I feel lucky to have watched Zidane play. And to be, you know, to be a player that he was, to get to see him like I did, I feel very lucky. So, yeah, great stuff. Great stuff from Fran, and we really appreciate him calling in. We're going to move on here. We're going to get a little more local here. We're going to get into the MLS, Major League Soccer, where we've got quite a bit of off-season activity going on here. Most notably this week, Rafa Márquez, former Barcelona defender, was released by New York Red Bull this week in a move that was deemed mutual. However, after 4 disappointing years in the MLS, it was clear that it was time for Márquez to go. He wasn't worth the contract he was on, and he just had to go. He now heads back to his native Mexico, where he's already hooked up with Leon, and my guess is he'll finish his career there here in the next couple of years. Any thoughts on Rafa Márquez and his time in the MLS, Sam, and kind of what this move kind of signifies with New York?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, without being too disrespectful, Todd, you know, I almost forgot that he played in the MLS. You know, it's a name that you associate with Barcelona and the Mexico national team, and you forget about that. And, you know, if you're not hearing a player like that, if you're not hearing his name on a regular basis, it means that he's not having an impact. Unless he's doing things off the field or he's just, you know, disrupting the dressing room. If you're not hearing about the player, it's because they're having no impact. And I think, Todd, any new player coming to any new team, it's very, very important they get off to a good start, right? I look at Fernando Torres. His first real game for Liverpool was against Chelsea in the start of the season, and he scored in his first game and absolutely turned John Terry inside out, right? Very important. Same thing with Luis Suarez, right? Obviously, just here looking at, you know, Liverpool examples, because they're, you know, they're fresh in my mind, but, you know, I think it's important that you get off to a good start, and he really didn't get off to a good start with the Red Bulls. And I think, you know, if you don't get off to a good start, it's almost like you being in the same position as a manager. So if you get off to a poor start, you're on the back foot straight away, and all of a sudden, you know, it starts coming about confidence, and it, you know, people question you, and all of a sudden questioning yourself. You know, look at Fernando Torres at Chelsea, got off to a terrible start, and you know, it may be now that the you know, that Rafa maybe return that round, but if you think about the start they had at Chelsea, you know, really, really pretty, you know, pretty terrible in terms of goals, and that affects confidence. And
Márquez never seemed invested in the league. You know, you look at a Robbie Keane and the honest effort he puts in week in and week out. Márquez, to me, came here. You know, he was already disgruntled leaving Barcelona because he lost his spot to Piqué at center back. He comes here thinking that he's going to be able to do whatever he wants, and he just really wasn't. He just wasn't the player that he once was. And You know, to me, he just seemed like he was on holiday the whole time he was here. And that's a pretty expensive holiday for New York Red Bull and MLS. And, you know, I think what you say is right. I mean, it made me laugh, but it's right. I mean, I forgot he was playing as well, you know. And so, you know, I think to me it's a good sign that the MLS is saying to these high-end, you know, names that are on a lot of money, no, this isn't going to work. If you're not going to come here and be invested in what's going on and play hard and play honestly, then we don't want you here. And I think that that's a sign of maybe where the league is at because, you know, you've had, let's be honest, there's been quite a few in the history of the MLS, there's been quite a few European players that have come in or guys that have had careers in Europe that have come in thinking that they were, you know, this is their retirement and they're just going to walk around and get a paycheck for their last couple of years and they've gotten away with it.
I think in the last couple of years,
you know, we had Blaise Coupeau come here, the Swiss player that was so successful in Holland and with the Swiss national team. He came to Seattle. He was literally walking around, and they got rid of him. And now I think this is a good sign, you know, for the league. And, you know, best of luck to Rafa Marquez, you know, as he goes back to Mexico. And I hope he can, you know, finish his career out well there. But it's a good thing for us, for the league that we're moving these guys on and just saying, hey, this isn't good enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you know, David Beckham leaving the league, you know, that's a bit, you know, that we've lost a big player there. But you know, this really sends a powerful message to the players coming into the league, Todd, and it also sends a very powerful and a positive message to the young kids, the young homegrown players that are growing up in the MLS. That, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work hard and you have the quality to be successful, right, then we've got a chance. And it's good for the MLS and certainly for the younger players at the Red Bulls to see that, hey, you know what, we're not going to put up with a player here coming on honeymoon. We're not going to put up with a player that's going to come in and, you know, not have a team-first mentality. And I think it's right. I think it's positive. Because the league needs to go forward, Todd. It can't go backwards now that Beckham's.
Yeah. Sam, I don't want to interrupt you here, but we've got a monumental occurrence happening right now. I'm pretty sure that somebody's just called into the show. I'm going to click over here, and I think we've got Cam from Seattle on the line here. I'm just going to check this. It would be amazing if it is indeed our first caller. This is Todd Stauber here with Sam Lady on from the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're here on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Is this Cam from Seattle?
This is.
Cam, how are you doing?
Good, I am.
Good. Well, you're our first ever caller into the show, so we'll be sending you some party gifts. Maybe a picture of Sam and I. I'm not quite sure what that'll be, but we're talking MLS right now. And what do you have for us? You got some questions on the MLS? Shoot away.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering. You know, can't really blame Park for leaving. It sounded like he wanted to go home and stuff. But wondering what are our options? You know, are we gonna have? Is Siggy's going to expect people to step up, or are we going to go out in the market and find another good person for the back? What do you guys think?
Yeah, also, just for our other listeners here, you're talking Jeff Park, ex-Seattle Sounders central defender. Is that right, Cam?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been traded to the Philadelphia Union. And just this week, the Sounders did re-sign both Ioane and Hurtado,
yeah.
And they will have those. But I have to think, and Sam, you can weigh in on this as well, but I have to think that they're going to go out and get somebody else because Ioane, to me, is kind of a guy that provides cover for the other two center backs. Now, of course, the Sounders do have Zach Scott as well that can provide cover at center back. But I have to think that they're going to go out and bring in another center back. Sam, would you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you don't. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm not a massive fan of Jeff Park, but you know, he was a player. Him and John Hurtado was a partnership that he relied upon in the big games. And you know, Patrick Ioane comes in and out now and again. You know, when there's an injury or if he feels that you know Ziggy thinks that he needs to get some minutes and there's some games coming up where he thinks he can get some playing time. But yeah, pretty surprised by that one. But you know, like most things, you don't make decisions like that unless you've got a plan coming in or unless you're a Liverpool Football Club. You know, you don't get rid of Andy Carroll, right, unless you've got someone else coming in.
DVD. DVD jumped in there and stole Dempsey from us. But I've got to think, Todd, that there's going to be somebody coming in. Maybe it becomes a designated player. Maybe we've got the eye on somebody else. But yeah, I don't think you make a decision like that. I don't think there's anybody, any young lads coming through the youth ranks, coming to the academy, that's going to fill his role. I certainly don't see Patrick Vianney filling in that position.
Certainly don't either. And I do know for a fact that the Sounders' hand was a bit forced with the Jeff Park trade. Park did grow up in Philadelphia. He and his wife just had their first baby. They wanted to be back closer to their family. And the biggest thing was that the option on his contract that the Sounders would have had to pick up was just too big and would have put them in some trouble with the cap space. So I think it was a combination of a personal decision on Jeff Park's part and also a business decision on the Sounders that they just had to get that move done. But I agree with you 100%, Sam. I don't think you make this move unless you've got something in the works, because if you're relying on Patrick Vianney, while I think he's a good, solid guy that can provide cover at center back, if you're relying on him to fill that role, I just don't think with where the Seattle Sounders say that they want to be heading, I don't think that's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Ken, we really appreciate the call. We're going to click you off air here, but we really appreciate the call and the question, and you'll always go down. You'll be in history as the first ever caller on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. Cam, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks,
cheers,
guys.
Okay, thanks. Cheers. Well, Sam, that was emotional. Can't believe we actually had one. We're going to stay on the MLS here. LA Galaxy traded Edson Buttle to Colorado Rapids for a draft pick and allocation money this week. With Robbie Keegan having the season he did once again, Buttle was really just not needed at the Home Depot Center anymore. So they went ahead and moved him on. Other interesting news in the MLS coming out of New York is Manchester City owner Sheikh Mansour was rumored to be looking at a $161 million purchase of an MLS franchise to be based out of Queens in New York City, with David Beckham rumored to be part of the deal. City, having reported annual losses of over $158 million on Friday, however, denied the rumor today. I will say this, though, Sam. I don't think Mansour can be too shy about this offer if he could get an entire MLS franchise for the price of one of his players at Man City.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably pull his credit card out and stick that on the credit card and just transfer the money over on that.
He reached into his front pocket and paid for the entire franchise.
Yeah. It's it reminds me of a scene from Smokey and the Bandit. That was rather amusing. But the amount of money that's being thrown around is ridiculous.
Yeah, it'd be interesting development there. I talked a little bit, I think, a few weeks back about seeing David Beckham maybe align himself with that Cosmos franchise and looking to build a rivalry there with the Red Bulls. And it's that type of rumor, Todd, doesn't come out without there being substance behind it.
I think something else that's interesting is, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the show that, the one interesting clause in Beckham's contract in dealing with the ownership of an MLS team was that New York was off limits. Yet, we've heard now of him being involved in two potential situations in New York City. Without knowing what's going on behind the scenes, one would have to think that perhaps there's something going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Should
be interesting. Well, we'll keep our listeners up to date on that. As we go forward with the show, we're going to move on to the game predictor. Sam, you were just in a shocking position last week. You had a couple great results fall your way. You're now sitting even at 11-11, while I'm just ahead of you at 11-9. We've got one result that's pending, which is where David Beckham will end up. I'm saying QPR. You're saying PSG. We'll see how that works out. I know that Beckham was in London, where his wife Posh Spice is part of the musical there that she's doing with the Spice Girls. The rumor of Beckham going to Australia was cut out. This week he has said that he is not going to go to Australia. So it should be interesting to see what happens here. I think PSG is still certainly in the mix, and I'm hoping that Harry Redknapp is calling in, because I could certainly use those points here in our game predictor. We're going to go to these games for the week here, though. Give me your give me your call on Tottenham Swansea tomorrow.
Cool.
White Hart
Lane. Tottenham Swansea. I'm gonna go with 2-1 to Swansea.
Ooh, I like it. DVD upset at home. Maybe he can get some film. Maybe he can get some film on the game and he'll watch it. It'll be interesting to see. Okay, I've got that as a 1-1 draw. So we'll see how that works out. Next game, West Bromwich Albion, West Ham United at the Hawthorn. Sam, your thoughts?
West Brom to bounce back from their recent slump. I think they're going to win this one 2-1. West Ham, a couple of injuries. The Army looks like he's out. He's a big, big player for them. You know, West Brom, I think, will be set up to deal with that physicality of West Ham. And obviously got a very smart coach in Steve Clarke. So I'm going to go with a 2-1 win to West Brom.
I've also got West Brom winning this, but I've got them at 2-0. I agree with you that I think that they're going to break this run of bad form here and get a result in this game. I just don't think West Ham can go in there and win it. And I do think Steve Clarke's done a great job. He's a great manager. And, you know, it's as you know in football, Sam, it's a game that it's up and down all the time. And they had such a great start to the season and put themselves in such a fantastic position. You know, yeah, they've dropped off a little bit, but it's not like they've fallen off a cliff. They're still right on the edge of the top four Champions League position. And I think they get this win tomorrow 2-0. And we'll be interesting to see how that goes. Now, give me your Wenger prediction. Arsenal Reading at the Majeski Stadium on Monday.
Okay, I'm going to go with 3-1 to Arsenal. I think Reading will get a goal against Arsenal, that's for sure. But I think Arsenal will win it
3-1. Excellent. I do agree that I think Reading will get a goal, but I think Arsenal's going to get two. I think I'm going to go 2-1 to Arsenal. And I think that's going to give I don't think it's going to be a great performance from Arsenal. I just don't think it's going to be a great performance, but I do think they're going to get a result there, and that'll give Wenger a little bit of breathing room, you know, and maybe get the fans off of his back, and maybe you know, it'll clear things up a little bit there. But I do agree, I want to make clear that I think that team, and I think Arsene Wenger is in trouble. Last game of the week, Sam, is over in Japan here. It'll be kicking off here in about 12 hours. Corinthians and Chelsea. Tell me your score and maybe throw in a goal score there. We'll get a bonus point in for a goal score.
Okay. I'm going to say 2-1 to Chelsea.
Okay.
I'm going to say Gary Cahill and our friend Juan Mata will be the goal scorers.
Okay, I like it. Cahill Mata. Duly noted there. I do think Chelsea's going to win this. I think they're going to win it pretty handily. 2-0. And I'm going to go with Torres on a brace.
Oof. Well,
I'm going to go with Torres on a brace. I think he's gaining form. I think he's gaining confidence under Rafa Benitez. I don't know what those two have going together, but you know, I think that they're gonna be able to work that out. So yeah, it should be a good one. This is Todd Sovereign, Sam Lady. We're just about done here on From the Touchline for 90 minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio. And you can get our shows archived on backsportspage.com. Listeners could call in today, talk with us live, 760-283-0846. As always, you can now text us, 360-920-7273. From the Touchline, as always, it's brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. Just for our listeners, next week we will be off due to the holiday. We will be traveling out of town. We will be back with you on Saturday, the 29th of December. But again, Next week, December 22nd, we will not be on the air. We know you'll miss us greatly. I know that Sam and I will miss doing the show greatly. But other than that, we just want to pass on again our condolences and our thoughts and prayers to the people in Newton, Connecticut, where that terrible disaster happened this week with the elementary school shooting that took the lives of 26 people. And just going to sign off here. For Sam Lady, I'm Todd Stauber. We really appreciate you on the show. We're very appreciative to our guest, Fran O'Brien, and our first caller, Cam from Seattle. Thanks again. We'll see you in 2 weeks.